Good morning. John Munson and for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of WPR. Happy Labor Day. And speaking of the holiday, by late this afternoon, Wisconsin's highways will be full of cars as people head home from wherever they spent the three-day weekend. More vehicles on the road means more opportunities for accidents, some of which will be fatal. Highway safety experts are concerned by the increase in traffic deaths between 2014 and 2015 across the nation. Here in Wisconsin, we also saw an increase in traffic deaths during that time period, which came after decades-long improvements in traffic safety. The question is, why? That's what we're going to talk about this hour on the Joy Cardine Show. What do you think is the reason for this spike in fatal crashes in 2015? Distracted driving, drunk driving, increased speeds, lower gas prices, all of the above? You can join the discussion by calling 800-642-1234 or posting your comment to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And you can also send us an email. The address is talk@WPR.org. My guest is Nicholas Jarmus, a director of public affairs for AAA Wisconsin. He oversees community affairs, traffic safety, advocacy, and corporate citizenship efforts for the AAA's operations here in Wisconsin. Good morning, Mr. Jarmus, and welcome to the Joy Cardine Show.
Good morning, John. Pleasure to be with you this morning.
So the National Highway Traffic Safety reports that the national average of traffic fatalities in 2015 was just under 11% per 100,000 population, or 11 fatalities for 100,000 population, an increase from 2014's numbers. So before we get into the specific details, I'm just curious as to what your reaction was to this report.
Well, it's troubling, to say the least. As you mentioned in the intro, we have seen years of declines, and it was very encouraging for those of us in the traffic safety world to see those numbers going down year after year, and to see them turn around and kind of spike back up again was discouraging, but also certainly a good reminder that we cannot become complacent. We need to, you know, continue to double down on our efforts. Because the problem is not going to disappear anytime soon. There's still a lot of work to be done.
Do you think, I mean, there have been a lot of advances in automobile safety, just in the technology of vehicles, cars and trucks, with crash avoidance systems and a lot of new vehicles, and even just, you know, improvements like better seat belts, airbags, that kind of thing that can make accidents more survivable, improvements in the way our highways are constructed and so forth. I mean, it just seems like we've been making great strides in terms of the mechanics of driving. So it seemed, I remember when I first saw this story, I thought, well, that's counterintuitive. I thought we were doing a really good job. So where is this increase coming from? I mean, the only thing left really is the human factor. Are we not paying attention? Are we impaired? What's going on?
Well, that really is the bottom line. You know, we do talk a lot about the correlation between you know, the number of people on the road, and we've seen an increase in that in the last couple of years driven by the economic recovery and lower gas prices. But, you know, lower gas prices don't make you look at your phone while you're driving. Lower gas prices don't force you to get behind the wheel after you've been drinking. It is human error. The overwhelming majority of crashes are caused by human error. So this is a case of correlation, not being causation. And AAA's Foundation of Traffic Safety puts out an annual what they call a Traffic Safety Culture Index, where we try to measure what sort of behaviors and habits people have behind the wheel, at least what they're willing to admit to in the survey. And we've seen some really troubling turnarounds in those trends as well, in terms of the number of people admitting to these dangerous behaviors, particularly when it comes to alcohol, speed, and distraction, which at least here in Wisconsin, and I imagine nationally, make up the majority. Here in Wisconsin, about 60% of all fatal crashes involve alcohol, speed, or distraction.
Well, now, in Wisconsin, we just recently saw an increase in the speed limit on our interstates from 65 to 70 miles per hour. Do you think that's going to have a negative effect on traffic fatalities?
We do, and in fact, AAA argued against raising the speed limit. We advocated for keeping it where it was at because we've seen this in other states. This is part of a nationwide trend of pushing these speed limits higher and higher, particularly in the upper Midwest. We see some states now that are even trying to go higher than 75, you know, and making an 80-mile-an-hour speed limit. The problem, there's two big problems with that. First of all, advocates of raising the speed limit commonly argue that, well, people are driving, you know, this fast anyway. What we're simply trying to bring the law in line with what the common behavior is on the road because, you know, we're not able to really enforce it at what it is, and let's just, you know, kind of align the two again. And what we see is that that's not really the case. It does encourage people to drive even faster. And according to our Traffic Safety Culture Index, the number of people who admit to driving 15 miles an hour or more on a freeway in the past 30 days has increased from 46% in our 2015 survey to 48% in the survey that we released this year. So, mm-hmm. you know, in Wisconsin, that means instead of possibly going 80 in a 65 zone, you're now going 85 in a 70-mile-an-hour zone.
Well, I mean, let's face it. When the speed limit on the interstate was 65, the real speed limit was 74.9.
Exactly.
Because you know, while state patrol officers won't admit this, of course, they aren't going to generally pull you over for 5 miles an hour over the limit, but they will for 10. And that's, you know, that's just, you can observe that, I mean, just by driving. And so now with the 70-mile-an-hour speed limit, the effective speed limit is 79.9. And if you're not driving at least 78, you're kind of a speed bump.
Absolutely. And, you know, law enforcement, they, there's no official policies about this. But, you know, the fact of the matter is they need to put their resources towards the worst offenders. So sometimes it's, you know, if they pull someone over for going 1 mile an hour over the limit, while they're sitting on the side of the road processing that ticket, someone blows by going, you know, 10, 15 miles an hour limit. So they tend to focus on what are these higher speed categories, you know, because that's what the real problem is. Mm-hmm. And the second, you know, problem with raising the speed limit or with higher speeds in general is even if you can't demonstrate, and some have argued this, that you can't demonstrate that it actually causes more crashes, the fact of the matter is that the number or the impact of the crashes that do occur are much greater. So it's much more likely that a crash will be a fatal crash if it's happening at 80 or 85 miles an hour than if it's happening at 65 miles an hour or 60 miles an hour. So
yeah, that's just physics, and the laws of
absolutely.
Physics are immune to politics. And I don't want people to think that I'm being critical of law enforcement. I think the point you made is that it's really important to get that person that's doing 15 over, and maybe not quite as important as the person doing 8 over.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, yeah, the state of Wisconsin's rate of increase was actually lower than the national average, but not stellar. We were 38th in the nation in terms of fatalities per 100,000 population. And the increase that we saw in Wisconsin was significant, even though we did rank 38th. We're not Wyoming, thank goodness. But how do you feel about Wisconsin's numbers overall?
Well, you know, it's difficult to judge state by state in terms of the other variables involved, the number of metro areas, the just the sheer number of population. If you look at it, you know, the way you presented it, the crashes per certain segment of the population, we were below the national average. But if you look at it, just the sheer numbers, the increase in the number of fatal crashes was about 8% nationwide, 2014 to 2015. It was about 10% higher in Wisconsin, 2014 to 2015. So, you know, it's hard to say, you know, any one of these crashes. These are real lives at stake, and they're real tragedies every time they occur. And so it's not, it doesn't really, you know, take anything away from it to say, well, just because it's per capita, you know, it's not as significant of a problem. You know, these are real lives that are being lost on our roadways here in Wisconsin. And it doesn't really matter how we stack up against other states. We want to move towards, you know, the stated goal of DOT, which we support, which is moving towards zero deaths on the road. And that's really mm-hmm. the only goal we should be focused on. We shouldn't focus on, are we doing better than other states, neighboring states or other states in the country. We're trying to eliminate any fatalities on our roadways.
Well, and it looked like we were really heading in the right direction. I mean, I think we got to, 2013? We had less than 500 fatalities, which was the lowest number since, I think, 1944. And so then all of a sudden we get to, 2014 was a good year. 2015, now we had this bump. We're still trying to figure out where that's coming from. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about how we're doing county by county in Wisconsin. And where that's going. What do you think, listeners? Why are we having more fatal crashes all of a sudden? Is it distracted driving? 800-642-1234, talk at WPR.org, or post to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm John Munson. This is the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm sitting in for Joy Cardine this week on the Joy Cardine Show. This hour, we're talking about the increase in traffic fatalities with Nicholas Jarmus, a director of public affairs for AAA Wisconsin. So are you traveling this holiday weekend, heading home today? And what do you do to remain safe while on the roads? What's your policy on those addictive screen things we all carry with us these days in terms of how they're used in the car and by whom? What's your reaction to the rising number of Wisconsin traffic fatalities and traffic fatalities in the nation as well? And what do you think needs to be done to get those numbers heading back down? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Email at talk at WPR.org. And you can also post your comment or question on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So we've been talking nationally and some about Wisconsin. Let's kind of zero in a little bit on Wisconsin. There was a county by county report that came out showing which counties had the most traffic deaths in Wisconsin. Milwaukee County is listed as number one. My guess is that Milwaukee County is number one because, well, there are a lot more people and a lot more cars there. But is there something else behind this?
You know, it's difficult to say. I haven't seen the per capita breakout per county. So there certainly is more opportunity for crashes in Milwaukee County just because of the sheer volume on the road. But some of the other factors that contribute to these crashes may be more prevalent in Milwaukee County. You have a higher percentage or a higher number of liquor serving establishments, and you have it as a destination for people, particularly on the weekends, coming in from the suburban counties and even from even further outlying areas, going downtown Milwaukee for the nightlife there, and then unfortunately, many of them getting back in their car and driving back home. So I know the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office has a very aggressive DUI task force, and I typically will see their reports in the media on Sunday morning about how many drivers that they've pulled over. And it's really pretty staggering to see the number of DUI tickets that they're writing in that county, and knowing, certainly that they're not catching everyone, that there are, people that are going to slip through and get by them, and just knowing that the number of people that are getting behind the wheel after drinking in Milwaukee County is very frightening, particularly, again, on a weekend evening. You also have greater cell service and better smartphone capability in the urban county, so not even just Milwaukee, but if you're in Milwaukee or Dane or these other main counties, you have more cell towers, better signal. I know myself from driving around the state, if you get into certain parts, particularly around the Dells or into some of the driftless zone, you really can't even use your phone behind the wheel if you really wanted to, because you simply don't get service there, or you don't get as strong a signal to browse or use those smartphone capabilities. But certainly in Milwaukee and the other urban counties, you're going to have a lot more of that.
Yeah, I mean, the I-90-94 corridor between Wisconsin Dells and Eau Claire is kind of a cell phone dead zone. Osseo to, and I know this because I drive that highway quite frequently, and you can just forget about making a call or getting a call or doing anything with your phone between Osseo and, there's a little blip when you get to Toma, and then again, not till you get closer to Madison do you get any kind of cell reception at all. So, I mean, that's clearly a factor. Milwaukee County had almost three times as many fatalities as the next highest county in the list, which was Dane County. But also in the top 10, some counties that aren't necessarily that heavily populated, Marathon County, which is where Wausau is, but that's a fairly rural area, Walworth, Waupaca, those are more rural counties. But Milwaukee, far and away the most. Let me ask this. Do you think that that part of the problem in Milwaukee is that you just have that many more cars on the road? And let's face it, there's a lot of road construction going on in the Milwaukee area. Is that a factor? If you combine the kinds of hazards that road construction creates just by, you know, the extra concentration it requires to navigate all the cones and things like that with somebody who may be impaired, does that increase the probability of a fatal traffic accident?
You know, it could. I wouldn't personally venture to say that, you know, that is or isn't the problem, but it certainly could be a contributing factor. I know, you know, that in Wisconsin we're lucky there's a system built into our state statutes that provides for a county-by-county traffic safety commission. So each county has one of these commissions, and it's primarily made up of law enforcement, engineers, both from the state and the local level and the county level, local health department representatives, local law enforcement agencies, and really anyone else that has an interest or a stake in traffic safety. And so they try to look at what are these, you know, really hyper-local concerns, trends. I know I'm personally pretty active on the Dane County Traffic Safety Commission, and I know they do a really great job of really drilling down on this data, trying to identify hot spots and facilitate some interagency cooperation. Because there's no one silver bullet solution to any one of these traffic safety issues. It really does take a lot of collaboration and cooperation between engineers and law enforcement and policymakers.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's really no one thing we can point at and say, aha, silver bullet. If we just fix this one thing, we'll be good. There's certainly a lot going on out there. We had a caller who couldn't stay with us, a listener named John, who called in to say he's driving down I-43 near Manitowoc, doing 73 miles an hour. He said somebody passed him who had to be going at least 80 and appeared to be using their phone. He said that kind of distracted driving may be causing problems, and we have talked about that earlier in the program. So we have the combination of, you know, excessive speed and, you know, checking that text or, you know, your Facebook update or whatever it is. That's a particularly scary thing.
Absolutely. That combination, that's something that we cited in our arguments against raising Wisconsin's speed limit, is this prevalence of distracted driving. And until we get our arms around this issue, it really creates a really dangerous recipe on the roads of people whose reaction times are already diminished because they're trying to split their attention between their phone or some other task and what's going on the road. And now we're reducing their reaction time even further by allowing them to go even faster. And so you really have a severely diminished reaction time on these roads, and that can lead to increase in crashes and, as I mentioned earlier, an increase in the severity of these crashes.
So, and we've talked about this a little bit, but I think the point needs to be made here. We did see decades of steady improvement in highway fatality numbers. And then now, We've got two consecutive years where we've seen increases. And do you think this is an anomaly or is this a trend?
You know, it's difficult to say. It may be too early. And, you know, when you look at even a 15-year trend out, we're, you know, where we are today is still significantly below where we were for any year prior to 2007, really, you know, before the recession even began. What's difficult in comparing these numbers year to year are the factors that may, you know, contributing to, you know, it's the kind of the what might have been factor. And in fact, the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety did a study looking at the increases in speed limits, you know, across the country. And one of the conclusions they came to is that this increase in speed limits that we've been seeing has almost completely wiped out the benefits that we saw in terms of reductions credited to airbags. And so you have, you know, some factors pushing, you know, the numbers down or that may be life-saving factors. At the same time, we're seeing these risk factors, you know, either new or exacerbated by higher speed limits or the increased prevalence of smartphones. And as you mentioned earlier, the changes in technology in the vehicles, crash protection systems in the vehicles, engineering things on the roadway. So, you know, it's difficult to say, well, you know, comparing this year to, say, you know, 1985, because we're driving cars that are very different than they were then. Our roadways are often configured in different ways. But at the same time, there weren't smartphones back then. But there was a greater acceptance of drinking and driving back then. So, you know, these factors change over time. Mm-hmm. You know, any sort of an upward trend, and we're anticipating, I think, where we are today in 2016 is already above where we were at this date in 2015. So we are potentially looking at another year of year-over-year increases. And, you know, that does, you know, suggest maybe this is a trend that we really need to be focusing on.
Well, and you mentioned this earlier. After the crash of 2008, we drove a lot less. Gas was, or before 2008, we drove a lot less because gas was really high. Then the gas prices dropped, and we got back in our cars, and we took off. We were seeing more people on the roadways, and this is a holiday weekend, so the roadways will be very crowded in Wisconsin this afternoon. People heading back to wherever they live from wherever they were recreating. Has the drop in gas prices been a factor here? And if so, how large a factor do you think?
Well, this has been a record year for travel this summer, particularly. The number of people getting in their cars, taking a road trip, taking some sort of a vacation in their car has been at historic highs, really. We saw in our forecasts for Memorial Day and Independence Day weekends record highs. We anticipated or predicted that about one-third, at least one-third of all American households were going to be taking some sort of a road trip this year, and that's, you know, higher than we've seen definitely any year since before the recession began, and even going back even further than that. And it's no coincidence that we're seeing gas prices that the lowest they've been, you know, in at least, you know, 10 years in some parts of the country. And it's not just that people are getting, you know, looking at the gas prices now and saying, well, because gas is only, you know, $2.15 or whatever, let's get in the car and take a road trip. We've been seeing these sustained lower gas prices for almost 2 years now, and so that accumulated savings that people are building up has encouraged them to, you know, use that money to take a trip. And so that, mm-hmm. again, putting more people on the road creates more opportunity for these sorts of crashes to occur. But, you know, we've seen at the same time a trend of people becoming less or more willing to engage in, you know, dangerous habits, particularly speeding, distraction, and even alcohol, which we've really turned a corner on that in the last 10 years, even here in Wisconsin. But we're starting to see, you know, maybe even a plateauing of that, and we really need to double down our efforts on that to push it down and really move towards that goal of zero fatalities on the roads.
Talking with Nick Jarmusch, who is the Director of Public Affairs for AAA Wisconsin. He oversees community affairs, traffic safety, advocacy, and corporate citizenship efforts for the AAA here in the Badger State. We're talking about highway safety. We've seen an increase in traffic fatalities over the last 2 years. It looks like 2016 we'll see another increase, and this after several decades of terrific improvements. I mean, if you remember back in the early 90s, Wisconsin regularly had more than 700 traffic fatalities per year. Now we're in the 500s. We were in the 400s. We're discussing this trend in the increasing number of traffic deaths, not just in Wisconsin, but nationally. What's behind this? Wondering what you think, and would like you to share your thoughts with us at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Talk at WPR.org is the email address. And you can also post to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. When you're out driving, you know, be honest. Do you take that speed limit as the limit? Or are you somebody who, you know, well, okay, they'll give me 6, 7, 8, maybe 9 over, you know, and is that what you do? And so on a 70-mile-an-hour freeway as opposed to a 65-mile-an-hour freeway, how fast are you driving? And have you seen distracted driving? And you know, Nick, I was one thing I wanted to mention was back before there were smartphones, people had cars. And I remember driving up the interstate. I was headed back to Superior from Madison, and I saw a car passed me driven by somebody who had a newspaper spread out on the steering wheel. That made me really nervous. I slowed way down to let that person get way ahead of me because I didn't want to be anywhere within a quarter of a mile of somebody who was trying to read the New York Times while they were driving. I don't know if it was the New York Times. I couldn't see the paper, but I couldn't believe it. I thought, holy cow, who would do that? But so, I mean, there's nothing new about people doing dumb things behind the wheel of an automobile. The prevalence of technology, and not just smartphones. If you take a look, what about all the information that comes to us on the screen of our radios in our cars these days? I mean, there's a lot coming at us without even thinking about looking at the smartphone.
Absolutely. And, you know, anything that you're doing in the vehicle other than, you know, watching the road and paying attention can be a distraction. And it's not a new issue. It's certainly an issue that has changed in recent years. And gotten a lot more attention because of the technology, both whether it's on your phone or built into the dash. These technologies can be incredibly distracting. AAA has done a lot of research, particularly on the concept of cognitive reaction or cognitive distraction with Dr. Strayer at the University of Utah, who's a noted expert in cognitive distraction, who actually began by looking at in the aviation industry and how you know, cognitive overload was impacting pilots. Now we have a lot of, you know, almost the same amount of technology built into our cars that you see on an aircraft almost, and that is certainly having an impact on drivers. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest conclusions from his studies is the fact that hands-free isn't risk-free. And we see a lot of technologies promoted as being safer because it's voice commanded. You can keep your hands on the wheel, keep your eyes on the road. And while there is value to that, the most dangerous form of distraction is the cognitive form. The idea that, you know, you may be looking right at the road, you may have your hands on your wheel, but if your brain is engaged in some other task or is distracted by some other issue, it's called inattention blindness, where you're not even seeing or processing what's on the road, even though your eyes are looking forward where they should be. Your brain isn't processing it, and thus you're not able to react to it.
Mm-hmm. Another factor here, and this is something that we had a caller, Steve from Rice Lake, a former police officer, who called in to say that one problem that he has seen is people driving too fast for the conditions of the roadway, whether it's raining or snowing or something like that. People are driving faster than conditions would suggest are prudent.
Absolutely. And, you know, getting back to that speed limit factor again, you know, people, even folks who try to obey the speed limit, sometimes think of the speed limit as the minimum limit, and that's what they're supposed to be driving, when really that's the maximum limit at ideal conditions. So if it's snowing, if it's raining, if there's other fog, other hazards on the road, and it's simply not safe to go, you know, 70 miles an hour on the interstate, you don't have to go 70 miles an hour on the interstate. You can
what?
Lower than that. There is a minimum.
Don't do it in the left lane.
Yeah, exactly. But so you can be cited, you know, even if you're going, you know, the posted speed limit, if the conditions would require you to drive slower in order to drive safely, you can still be cited for that. And that's something I think a lot of people don't necessarily realize when they get out there on the road.
Well, let's take a quick call before we have to break for news, because I think Victor in West Allis has a point that's related to this that I was hoping someone would bring up. Victor, let's see, are you there? Victor, hello. I'm not getting Victor. Well, Victor's point was that people are getting more impatient. So if you're driving, if it's a 55-mile-an-hour speed limit and you're driving 45, you can expect whoever is behind you to not be really happy. We want to get wherever it is we're going in a hurry. I don't know, maybe we don't like driving and we just want to get someplace and then do whatever it is we're going to do. How big a factor is our lack of patience? We want what we want and we want it right now.
I think it's a big factor. We released a study not long ago about aggressive driving and road rage, and found that about 80 to 85% of people admitted to taking some sort of aggressive action behind the wheel. And, you know, it's not, you know, the worst case scenario road rage for everyone, but, you know, things like purposely cutting someone off or, you know, purposely tailgating someone, you know, those are instances of aggressive driving that can be very dangerous. And we found that about 80% of people have admitted to doing those things, maybe not on a regular basis, but certainly at some point in recent days. And that's very troubling because, you know, again, it just is adding to this cocktail of we're driving faster, we're more distracted when we're behind the wheel, we're more impatient, we're more aggressive. And all of this, you know, it's hard to necessarily attribute which bears what percentage of responsibility, but it's all contributing to a very dangerous environment out there.
All right, well, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, Nick, I want to talk about some modern technology that we're seeing. We apparently are headed in the direction of driverless cars. There's a lot of advanced crash avoidance technology out there, and I want to get your take on what the hopes are for that in terms of our ability to control the number of people who get killed on our highways. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. Nick Jarmus is my guest. He's Director of Public Affairs for AAA Wisconsin. We're talking about highway safety today on the Joy Cardine Show, wondering what you think. 800-642-1234, talk at WPR.org. We'll be right back. I'm John Munson, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Joy Cardine is off this week. I'll be filling in all week. You're listening to this program about traffic safety, and I'm talking with Nicholas Jarmus, Director of Public Affairs for AAA Wisconsin, about why the state of Wisconsin and the nation saw an increase in traffic deaths from 2014 to 2015, and why it looks like 2016 will also show an increase. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Talk at WPR.org or post to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Okay, so we, Nick, we are living in an age where advances in technology are just occurring at a breakneck speed. We have a lot of automobiles now that have things like parking assist. They will give you a warning if you veer out of your lane. That is, if the sensors can actually see the center line. But I mean, there's smart cruise control, where if you come up on another car that's going slower, your car will automatically slow down, whether you tell it to or not, things like that. So we're seeing a lot of advances, and there's also a lot of discussion about driverless cars as being the future. We'll take the human error out of the equation by just not letting human beings drive. They'll be in a vehicle, but it'll be controlled by a... well, a computer, basically. So, what are some of your thoughts about all of this technology, and whether or not we'll be able to use it to reduce the number of people who get killed on our highways every year?
Well, there certainly is a lot of potential in these technologies, and we encourage automakers and technology companies to continue developing these and experimenting with these technologies because of that potential. But we certainly need to be cautious about the limitations. And one of the most important things today, because a lot of these technologies or early forms of technology are already being built into vehicles, as consumers and as motorists, we need to be aware and educated about the capabilities and limitations of the technology in our vehicle. So for one example, you talked about smart cruise control and auto braking, which are often talked about or sometimes talked about interchangeably, even though they're two very distinct technologies. So if you have a vehicle that has one of these technologies, you need to know if you have cruise control engaged and you come up on a vehicle that's driving more slowly or that brakes in front of you, how exactly is your car going to respond? Is it going to simply turn off the cruise control? Which would simply begin the car decelerating, but it wouldn't actually brake it? Or do you have an actual auto braking that will begin to apply the brake for you, for that vehicle, so that you know how you need to react? Because even with these technologies, even with the completely autonomous vehicles like Tesla or some of the Google technologies that are coming out, drivers, motorists still need to be engaged and aware of what's going on and be prepared to take over and actually pilot the vehicle themselves during emergency situations or when it's necessary to do so.
Let's try to take another call. We'll see if I can get technology to cooperate with me. Let's start with Joan, who is calling us from Milwaukee this morning. Joan, hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I think there are multiple problems with regard to the dangers on the road today. For example, now, some people, we live at a hectic pace these days. Some people are chronically late. It doesn't matter how hard they try, they're late, and so they're speeding. There are also older drivers, like myself, on the road, although I try to cut down as much as possible. Older drivers grew up at a time when the dangers on the road just were non-existent almost, and often are overconfident. They can handle it. They've been doing this for years, and they can handle it. And there are multiple addictions that exist in a car. All the gadgets, all the computer panels, the things that are bound to distract your attention. And then a carload of passengers, because they're all carpooling, all of them talking at once. All of these are multiple factors which create a very, very dangerous driving environment, especially for older drivers. I myself was hit by a young driver who was on her phone a number of years ago. She T-boned me. She said she was really sorry. She just wasn't in the see of the light, you know, ran the light.
Yeah.
There were plenty of witnesses there, but they had no intention of harming anybody, but cannot resist those multiple gadgets that exist in the car, all of which add up to a dangerous environment.
Joan, thanks for the call. Nick?
She touched on a lot of big concerns that we have and that we hear often. Younger drivers, particularly younger drivers in technology, is something we hear about a lot. And it's some of it is the case that the younger drivers are more engaged, more plugged in with this technology. If you look at the actual numbers, it's the slightly older group, the 20 to 35-year-olds, are some of the worst offenders when it comes to using technology behind the wheel. Part of that is because with teen drivers, we have built into our teen driving laws a complete ban on technology. So whereas An adult driver can use the phone to have a voice conversation. They can't use it to send an email, you know, whereas mm-hmm. for younger drivers, it's a complete ban. So there's some more...
What about Joan's point, though, about older drivers who don't realize things have changed? They think they still have the reaction time that they did when, say, they were 18 years old, and now they're, I don't know, in their 70s. Talk about that for just a moment.
Absolutely. That's a significant concern. Another area that AAA has been doing the research and putting together a lot of resources, because we are seeing more and more older drivers on the road. As the baby boomers move into this age group, you know, they're still active, they're still physically fit to drive, you know, at least in the basic sense. And people age at different speeds or the impact of aging, the effects of aging is unique for everyone. So it's a lot of self-regulation, you know, in terms of knowing your own limitations, knowing your own capabilities. The other major issue that senior drivers have is that even though many of them are the safest drivers on the road in terms of most likely to obey the speed limit, least likely to be using technology, least likely to be getting behind the wheel drunk or impaired, when they do get into a crash, you know, whether it's a crash that they caused or you know, was caused by the other driver, the injuries that they sustain are typically more severe, and they are it takes them longer to recover from these injuries. So it's really important for seniors to not only be aware of the changing environment on the roadway, and we would encourage them to take a mature operator's course either through AAA or through some other organization that can help them brush up on both the laws and the tactics that they need to navigate the roadways today, but also be aware of how to properly use the safety features in their vehicle, how to make sure that their seatbelt is properly adjusted, how to make sure that the airbag is the proper distance away from them so that it's not actually injuring them, but providing the safety benefit that it's designed to do. And AAA has a great program called CarFit. That we offer these as a program, or even just to go on our website and kind of look through this checklist yourself to make sure that your vehicle is properly adjusted in all the different ways that it can be adjusted to provide the maximum safety benefit and a maximum comfort to you as a driver.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Joan, thanks for the call. Let's go to Dan in Viola next. Dan, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I was going to mention, I think another contributing factor could possibly be the economy and just how hard, like, especially a single parent or someone working has to work multiple jobs or something, and then when driving while fatigued, and really fatigued driving can be just as or more dangerous as drunk driving. I'm a single parent, and when my son was a baby, I was working nights in a foundry pouring iron about 70 hours a week, showering at work, then going to the campus and being a full-time student, getting down to class. I'd go get my son for the day until it's time to go back to work that night. And there was one morning on my way home that I woke up when my car was rolling over. And so then after that, I quit school and had to find a little rest time, because it is bad trying to drive when you're tired.
Mm-hmm. Dan, thanks for that call. Yeah, fatigue driving, just as bad, really, as drunk driving.
It is, and there are some studies that show, you know, that being fatigued, it's an impairment, just like being impaired by drugs or alcohol or distraction. You know, the way it affects your brain slows your reaction time. You know, if you're completely asleep, then obviously there's no reaction time. But it's a significant challenge, and it's probably one that is pretty significantly underreported, because even when a crash does occur, you know, there's no blood test for being fatigued. You know, it's not like with your cell phone where if they find the phone in the car, they could see the timestamp on the last text and kind of conclude, okay, this was probably distracted driving crash. I mean, if you're tired, unless you can actually tell them, yes, I was tired, I was fatigued, it's really underreported, and it's something that probably does deserve more attention both from researchers and policymakers.
Mm-hmm. We've got about 2 or 3 minutes left here. It's Labor Day weekend, and it's the end of the Labor Day weekend. It's the last really big holiday weekend of the summer. So what can we expect on the road today?
Well, we're probably going to see a significant volume of traffic on the roads. Probably not as big if you traveled on Memorial Day or on Independence Day weekend. It may not be as big as that, but we certainly are going to see a lot of folks heading home, on the interstates, particularly midday today. You'll probably see the highest travel volumes. What I would caution anyone that is traveling today to be aware of is that, first off, if you're going through a construction zone, DOT has suspended work on all of those projects for the day, and they have attempted to open up as many lanes as possible to help with the traffic flow. But if you are going through those zones, even though the workers aren't there, make sure you're still obeying those lower speed limits in those zones, because those speed limits are really there not just to protect the workers, but also to protect you as motorists, because there are possibly uneven pavement, unusual configurations, narrower lanes, a lot of things going on in those areas that require extra attention, a little extra reaction time, even if the workers aren't there. So still follow those lower speed limits. Follow the rest of the speed limits in the non-construction zones. And then, of course, make sure you're not driving if you're fatigued, if you're impaired by drugs or alcohol, and stay focused on the road. Don't, get a head start on checking those emails or looking at your calendar for the week ahead or whatever else you might be doing on your phone. Stay focused on what you're doing, so you can get home safely, so that everyone can get home safely from this weekend.
Yeah, that would be huge. And one of the things that we're seeing a lot more of today, maybe than we have in the past, is bicycles. I mean, there's a lot more to look for out there, and there are a lot of people biking today. How big a factor do you think that is?
It is a big factor. And in fact, I know here in Wisconsin, we've seen a pretty significant increase in the number of bicyclists killed. We went from 4 in 2014 to 15 in 2015. I mean, just a huge increase. And part of that is due to, again, more people on the roads, more bicyclists on the roads. It's a very popular recreational activity here in Wisconsin.
Okay.
Particularly, you get out in the rural areas and you're sharing the lanes. And there may not be enough education, enough awareness about who has what responsibility in those situations.
All right. Well, we're out of time. Thank you so much for talking with us today, Nick. It's been an enjoyable hour.
Likewise, John. Thank you for having me.
Nicholas Jarmus, Director of Public Affairs for AAA Wisconsin. This hour was produced by Nyasia Allison, Bill Martins, and Brian Chasso also pitched in. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.